Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Every Horror Movie on Netflix, the podcast where we watch, review, and discuss every horror movie on Netflix. I'm Patrick, and I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Allison with a Y.
Hello, everyone.
And as we all know, Allison with an I is off investigating a haunted nunnery. It was a haunted nunnery, right, that she was looking for in Venice?
No!
Jeweler.
Vampire jeweler.
Oh, a vampire. I literally forget some element of what she's looking for every single time that I try to say this. Vampire jeweler. I really hope she found him. Anyways, Allison with an I is still on her summer vacation in Italy. She will be back very, very soon from this extended sabbatical. But in the meantime, it is a two-hander today. We are here doing horror catch-up for the month of August, talking about all the horror that we've been watching, reading, experiencing for the past month.
Patrick, my understanding is that you have been catching up with a lot of the horror film releases.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got a bunch of new releases to talk about. It's been kind of a fun summer for new horror. Even just in the last month, two of the things that I saw that I'm going to talk about briefly today are Weapons and Together, and those both came out just in the past month. And I love both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Weapons is, I think, particularly relevant to the show because we just watched Zach Cregger's
Barbarian,
yeah, his previous film. And if you listen to the episode, you know I was lukewarm on Barbarian.
Possibly hostile at times.
Possibly hostile, yeah, I think that's very fair. And I flipped completely for Weapons.
Really?
I was super, super into it.
Wait, was it a real estate horror?
No, it's not real estate horror. If you don't know the premise of Weapons, haven't seen the trailer, the basic idea is it's this story that plays out in a small town where a classroom full of children from different families all go missing at the exact same time, the exact same night. They all just mysteriously get up, go running out of their houses with their arms held out wide like they're playing airplane or something, and they disappear. And then it's about kind of the fallout in the town as the families and everybody else tries to process this and figure out what happened.
That sounds so stressful to watch.
Yeah, it's an inherently spooky concept. And yeah, there's not the what I considered kind of half-assed, half-baked social commentary that he attempted in Barbarian for the most part. There are a few nods in the direction of some kind of commentary on school shootings. It goes absolutely nowhere, in my opinion, and those are the moments where it fails most. But for the most part, it is just a weird, spooky, surprisingly funny film that takes such a weird narrative approach. It kind of hops from character to character in this town, and it's almost this Memento sort of thing where as you encounter a new character's chapter, you know a little bit of about something that happens to them from the previous character's story, so you're always a little bit like a little baby step ahead of each new character that you meet, which is kind of a fun narrative structure. Julia Garner is in it, and she absolutely kills it. I'm so stoked. She's one of the most exciting new actresses that I've, discovered, I feel like is a weird word. But one of my favorite new actresses who's kind of popped on the scene recently.
Does Justin Long make an appearance?
I feel like it's not... Yes, he does. And I and I feel like that's not a spoiler, but he's just like in Barbarian, he hasn't really been marketed as being part of the cast.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like it's very much sort of a running joke, you know, a nod back to Barbarian. And I wonder if like that's just going to be a Cregger thing, like he just has Justin Long show up unexpected in his movies. Justin Long plays a far less pivotal role in this movie than he does in Barbarian, though. But yeah, Weapons, loved it. So many good performances, such a weird tightrope walk between drama, you know, trauma, as so many horror movies have been for the past few years, and just weird fun. It has one of the most outrageous climaxes I've seen in a while that I like wanted to guffaw at in the theater in like the best way. Like, it's an awesome resolution. But I'm glad to see it doing well. You know, I always like when original ideas made well do well at the box office. I mean, hell, I didn't love Barbarian, but I'm glad Barbarian did well enough for this guy to keep making movies, because at the very least, he has a very unique voice. And I like when a unique voice comes through instead of just the same old shit.
Very cool. Speaking of something that also sounded like it was pretty unique, you saw, was it, would you consider it a body horror comedy?
Yes. I would absolutely describe Together as a body horror comedy. And also, frankly, in the best way, because I'm not the biggest fan of like horror comedy, because so often horror comedy is so often just meta stuff. It's like, you know, just making fun of basic tropes that everybody knows about, you know, well, don't go in that room. Or it's very like wink and nudge to the camera, like trying to, you know, say, look how smart you are.
Everybody's trying to be the next Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah, or even just like the Scary Movie kind of shit. Horror comedy, not something I enjoy all that much. But Together goes hard as hell. I love body horror. If you listen to this show, you know I fucking love body horror. And so I love the premise of Alison Brie and Dave Franco playing a couple whose relationship is sort of falling apart. It's unraveling. And they stumble into a cave where they drink some water that mysteriously makes them have this like magnetic connection, attraction, where they just want to be physically close to each other. It intensifies and intensifies. And when they get close enough, their bodies start physically fusing, like just sticking to each other. Their like hands start to kind of like go inside of each other. It's a horrifying concept, beautifully portrayed on film. And you can tell the two of them, who I have a ton of respect for in the first place, are having so much fun, because they're a couple in real life.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, they're married. And they get to play essentially the world's worst couple in this movie. Just a couple that is not doing well at all and are not really doing right by each other for the most part. And then have this like sort of awful thing that starts forcing them together in an entirely different way. And there are jokes in the movie, but they're dark, like black comedy, and they're, you know, there's not that wink and a nudge. It's very situational humor, and they play it straight for the most part when the jokes do come into play. And it's not a joke a minute kind of movie, but it is definitely funny in some crucial moments. And it's delightful, and it culminates in, actually very similar to Weapons, an absolutely outrageous and like the most extreme place you could imagine this going to. It goes to, and it does it so well, and it's one of my favorite things I've seen this year. It's one of my favorite endings that I've seen in a while. Certainly right up there with Weapons, actually. Some good horror movie endings this month, actually. Nice. But yeah, absolutely loved Together. That one is disappearing from theaters rapidly, which I'm kind of sad about, but whatever. At least a good one got some attention in Weapons.
Very cool.
I'm also stoked about Alien Earth.
What is that?
Alien Earth is the new series on Hulu. I think Disney Plus technically too, because those are like in bed with each other at this point. Which is so weird to me that Alien movies are on Disney Plus, which
there's
is dominated
some weird
by
weird stuff on Disney Plus.
Animated movies and fucking Disney Channel originals. But regardless, I believe it's the first TV series to have spun out of the Alien franchise.
Yeah, I've never heard of one before.
Yeah. And as we all know, for the most part, I'm a huge simp for Alien. I fucking love the Alien movies. I've seen everyone multiple times.
He loves a franchise, folks.
I do. I sure do. I did not love Alien Romulus, but I've talked about that on the show before. That's the one that I won't go to bat for. Regardless, this is unrelated to Alien Romulus, which is great. And the basic premise is the Xenomorph finally makes it to Earth. There's been so much action out in space and other planets and whatever. And in this show, the alien crash lands to Earth on a ship that is carrying not just the Xenomorph we're familiar with, but I think it's four other alien, very dangerous alien species.
Wait, hold on a second. So I've only seen maybe two alien films ever. Is it always the same fucking alien the entire time?
No, that's okay. That's a good question. No.
How fucking powerful is she?
No, so the original Alien movie, there was just one alien. And then
menace to the universe.
And then in one of the greatest sequel titles of all time, the second movie in the franchise is called Aliens.
Okay, which
there's like a fucking horde of the mm-hmm. same xenomorph, the same creature that you see in the original. So there's a bunch. But I meant essentially this is the first time that that creature,
that type of creature,
has made it to Earth. Okay,
so it's not just that she's a menace to the universe and gets all around.
Yeah, she's not like the Freddy of the cosmos or something.
I'm actually kind of sad now, because for a second I was kind of hype on her.
I mean, I actually kind of like that idea, but that horse left the barn a long time ago. Damn. I want to live in the universe where like the alien from the original Alien movie is just solely a single creature continuing to wreak havoc for multiple movies and shows and decades.
It would definitely be one of those good for her scenarios.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, Alien Earth is from Noah Hawley, who created the Fargo TV series, which we watched a bunch of and loved. I think it's safe to say we both really liked
it. It was great, the couple seasons I watched.
He is a fucking master of adapting movies that you wouldn't necessarily think are the best suited for a TV adaptation and just doing a bang-up job. It's great so far. And the interesting thing is there hasn't even been that much like run, shoot, shoot, alien kind of stuff for the most part. It's been a lot of character setup. Our main character is such an interesting concept to describe, but it's a synthetic person. It's essentially an android, but it has had the mind, the soul of a dying young girl transplanted into the body. So this near future, the idea is that if your physical meat body is dying, you can upload yourself into a synthetic body. So this is a girl who's been essentially given like a second lease on life.
Wow.
And is now also in a position where she's a good person to send in to take down an alien that's good at killing actual meat people.
Actual meat people. That's my new noise band. What are you playing?
A xenomorph skull.
Nice.
Someone has to have like 3D printed a xenomorph skull. I need that. I want it for like my wall.
I'm surprised we've never seen one at like a horror convention.
Honestly, yeah.
That's get on it. If you're an artist out there and you can do stuff like that, make it. We'll buy it.
Yes. I'm going to Google that as soon as we finish recording here. I need this in my home immediately. And I mean, it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, it exists.
It has to.
Someone has to have done it. The only question is if it's prohibitively expensive. Regardless, the other cool thing that I really enjoy about Alien Earth is the world building. And I mean, this world has been built out a lot over various films, sort of like what humans are doing in space. But it sets up this idea right at the beginning of the whole thing that the world at this point in the near future is literally ruled by four different corporations. And so there's this like, and it's of course so entirely plausible. And there's, you know, a lot of political commentary, a lot of, just kind of behind the scenes, like corporate politics, which I mean, I guess could be boring. It's not Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace. it's compelling, it's fun, and I'm really excited to see where it goes next. But Allison, I know you haven't been consuming quite as much horror as I have. I've been like binging the last few weeks.
Not even close.
Yeah. But you do have what I hear is a pretty bad movie you watched recently.
Yeah. So the other weekend I was hanging out with my sister and brother, and I was staying over with them, and they had had a long day. And so I was like, hey, what if we just like watch, you know, and I said a shitty horror movie. But I may have asked the universe a little too hard because, hoo boy.
You got what you were looking for.
We got what we were looking for. So we were recommended by our other sister to go find something from Amazon Prime because she said that there was a lot of really great, terrible horror films on there. The one that she had recommended was not what we watched, but I feel like I have to watch it because I think it was called Cocaine Crabs from Outer Space or something like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That sounds like an Asylum classic.
Yeah, yeah.
Or a sci-fi classic.
So we didn't watch that one, but we watched this one called Uninvited Visitor.
Mm.
And it was entirely shot on a Ring camera.
Oh, God.
And it was like an interesting concept. We were kind of like, ooh, we have to check this out. The one saving grace of the movie is that it is less than an hour long.
That would help a lot. But this is, I mean, when you say a Ring, it's like all from the same Ring camera.
Yes.
Jesus.
It is.
It's not like there's different angles, like in a Paranormal Activity or something.
Just the front porch of this house. Basically, like the premise is this woman starts to like hear knocking at night. And so her boyfriend comes over, installs a Ring camera, and that's where it begins. Mm. I feel like the story itself had potential, but the acting was so, it was so bad. I was like, why did Amazon pay to have this on their platform?
I mean, probably because just like, in terms of like the sheer volume of content they can put out, it probably cost them like $5 to buy it. And they were like, we'll have one more movie. Great.
Oh my God. The acting was atrocious. I mean, I hope none of them are listening. I'm so sorry. Blame your director. It's not you. It's your director. And if you're the director, what the fuck?
We're going to get an email from the director.
And then like, have them on.
Yeah, he's going to be like a little drunk and be like, I want to tell my side of the story.
Listen, I'm open to it. But the part that had us screaming while watching it was about maybe like halfway through, there's this scene in which a sandwich is placed on a table outside, so in view of the camera. And throughout the rest of the film is a generous word, throughout the rest of the movie, the sandwich changes with no explanation. It's on a different plate in a different location. It looks like a different fucking sandwich.
Wow.
And there's even one scene where it just completely disappears and then reappears the next scene.
This almost seems like it has to be intentional. Do you think there was anything self-aware about this?
No.
Okay.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, it's very apparent that it's like, it was, you know, a very, very, very low budget thing that was shot, but and probably just a bunch of friends got together and did it. So, I mean, good for them for like creating a thing, but just like the continuity at least.
Mm-hmm.
Like, can we at least mark where the sandwich is supposed to go and have like the same plate for it?
Yeah.
That was, I don't know why that really bothered me so much, but then it became kind of like a fun little game where we would be like, oh, sandwich is different this time. Oh, nope, it's back. Oh, it's back to the original plate now.
I'm just so baffled by they're not attempting to make this like a one take thing. Like,
no,
not, yeah,
you're seeing, it's basically like, you know, it's capturing the movement on the camera.
Over
so
time.
It, yep. Yeah. So it shows up, you know, it turns back on when there's activity outside the house.
Oh, gotcha.
And you know, there is a lot that's happening with like the main characters on the front porch of the home. It's kind of like, you know, it's a front porch that you would hang out on.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So in that sense, like that aspect felt plausible.
Yeah.
And then of course, I mean, there were like a couple little like spooky camera moments,
mm-hmm.
where in the distance you saw some creepy things.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pleased by that. But our expectations were low, and it managed to be even lower. But the most puzzling part is in like the Amazon rating, it had 3 stars.
Wow, that's pretty solid. Was it like two reviews?
Maybe. I don't know. I didn't check. We just saw like, oh, 3 stars. Like this, it's not going to be great, but it's not going to be horrendous.
Mm-hmm. One star review and 1 5-star review. That's
exactly what happened, I'm sure.
Did you have the urge to like take a clip from the movie and like post it on your local Facebook group and see if anybody could identify the people on the porch? That's one of my favorite genres of content in our local like community Facebook group, is people just posting like video from their Ring camera being like, look at this blurry guy who was like in my driveway last night. Like, if anybody sees this guy, it's like, this looks like shit. No one's gonna know who this is.
People are so weird.
They are very weird. Well, speaking of weird people, I read a delightful book. Actually, you might enjoy it.
Yeah.
Called Victorian Psycho.
Oh, that sounds like something I might enjoy.
Yeah. It is about a governess named Winifred Notty.
Okay, I'm already in.
N-O-T-T-Y, who is hired at this new family's home. And it is clear that there is something incredibly unwell with this young woman from square one. It's all told from her first person point of view. And she is the titular Victorian psycho. And she is a legitimate psychopath. She is a murdering psychopath. But a psychopath who's deeply empathetic, and you end up learning things about her where it's like, okay, I understand why you are the way you are.
Hmm.
Even if she does some things in the book that are truly heinous. She does a lot of awful things that are easy to forgive because she's doing them to awful, shitty, high-class people who are treating her like shit because she's a low-class governess. And then there are also some things she does to people who are entirely innocent. Mm. And that was the hardest part of the book to swallow for me. And it's why I said I think you might like it, because I think you might have a hard time with that handful of moments.
Mm-hmm.
But it is wildly funny, so disturbing, getting inside the head of this character. The author, Virginia Feito, F-E-I-T-O, does an incredible job of getting in this character's head. And it's a quick read. It is certainly eventful. And it just has some delightful, like, class politics to it. Mm. Because, you know, again, she's working for this family that are all just a bunch of rich fucking pricks. Mm. And so there's, you know, it's a good for her book to a certain degree. I don't know. I loved it. It's fucking weird. Boy, does it go there. It makes some choices. Graphic? It is graphic.
Yeah.
It is very graphic.
Yeah.
And I just learned as I was looking up the author's name, there's a movie coming. I didn't know this. And it's going to star Micah Monroe of It Follows and Long Legs fame, and Thomasin McKenzie.
Oh, wow.
I'm sure they are going to tone it down at least a little bit for the movie because, again, just graphic shit, including some shit that I cannot imagine someone adapting in any fashion a movie. But loved it.
That's intriguing.
Yeah, yeah. Give it a spin. It's probably like a 5-hour audiobook or something. Okay. I think you'll enjoy it.
All right, I'll add it to my list.
Mm-hmm. There's one moment that I know you will text me about as soon as it happens, and I hope that you make it past that moment.
Okay.
And that goes for anybody reading it, too. Violence Against Children, if you don't like Violence Against Children, may not be a book for you.
That's a big deal breaker for me.
Well, and you know, like, folks, listeners know that I am not a big fan, you know, the baby in Cargo. I was rooting for that fucking baby. So yeah, I mean, it was those were the moments that I had the hardest time with, but overall it worked really well for me and I enjoyed it
very, very cool. much.
The last thing that I have to report on this month is I did a franchise rewatch that was inspired by one of our recent movies. We watched Vampires versus the Bronx. Mm-hmm. And of course, Blade was mm-hmm. a huge like plot point in that movie. The kids were watching the original Blade to like learn how to hunt the vampires in the Bronx, which was a delightful touch. And it made me want to go back and rewatch the Blade movies. I had seen Blade 1 and 2 before. I had never seen Blade Trinity. And holy fuck, did that turn out to be just as much of a piece of shit as I had ever heard that it was. Yeah. An absolutely disgraceful end to the franchise. Like, Blade is honestly, like, barely in it for,
That's weird.
I mean, he's in it, but it focuses so much on these really boring new characters played by Ryan Reynolds and Jessica Biel. And
that's right.
Yeah. And that did not do anything for me. Not that I really expected it to, because it's generally pretty pretty hated. But Blade 1 and 2, still delightful. Blade 1, goddamn, it's one of the best like horror action movies of all time, I want to say. And I don't know how many horror action movies there are necessarily, specifically. I don't know. We were just talking about one. Aliens is a horror action movie. There's plenty out
there's
there.
There's plenty.
There's plenty. And I think Blade is just one of the all-time best. Like, it's so creative. You know, the fucking blood rave in the very first scene, I think it is, in the movie, is just unforgettable visual. Wesley Snipes is, of course, fucking iconic. Mm. David S. Goyer wrote the script, and I'm not the biggest fan of him in general, but he gave us "some motherfuckers are always trying to ice skate uphill," which is honestly one of the best lines in film history, I would say. But yeah, Blade goes hard. I almost want to say at this point, like, that's one of my favorite movies. It's kind of like crept up on me because I've seen it, you know, I don't know, probably 3 or 4 times over the years, but I like it more and more every time. It is just a fun ass creative movie.
I love that.
Yeah. Well, before we wrap up today, I know you did some research. You did some follow-up on our last movie.
Yeah, so our last movie, Don't Listen, brought in the Spanish Inquisition to a little degree.
Mm-hmm.
Part of like the history. And I realized I didn't know anything about the Spanish Inquisition outside of, you know, like Monty Python references.
Right.
And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to look into this. And so I listened to a couple of podcast episodes about the history of the Spanish Inquisition, and I would go into it, but it's super fucking depressing, which I should have known. But Monty Python did not prepare me for how fucked up the Spanish Inquisition actually was. And I'm not going to depress anybody by going into it, but I'm shocked I didn't really know anything about it prior to this. And I've taken like world history courses. I'm a big history person.
I am kind of shocked that you didn't know much about it. Like, I remember learning at least a little bit about the Spanish Inquisition in school back in the day. I mean, at the very least, I just remember all the fucked up torture devices they used.
Yeah, and it's like, it was obviously like that was a part of it, and that was part of all of these like fucked up kind of things that were happening around religion throughout Europe at the time. But yeah, it seems particularly heinous and frankly racist. it was bad.
Yeah, I actually don't even know or recall like who was doing the inquisiting or what they were inquisiting about. It was a religious thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically it was. So without getting too much into it, it was the king and queen. They basically became religious zealots. And decided that basically, like, the Jewish population of Spain who had converted to Christianity were not pure enough.
Mm.
It was it's really fucked up.
Oh, like, they weren't. So they were Christian, but they weren't Christian enough, yes. Basically? Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's how it all started.
Huh. That's
and
wild.
And then it just turned into, like, it started with, like, them, I think, executing 6 men, and then it just ballooned from there.
Damn. Did it lend any new context to Don't Listen?
No, because I didn't really get into anything about witches. Which I'm sure was part of it, but Not the main part of it. So yeah. In the couple of podcast episodes that I listened to, they didn't really touch on that aspect.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. Well, you know, we always say, like, on Horror Catch-Up, we talk about what we've been reading or discussing, or real-life horror, and I think this is maybe the closest, actually, we've ever gotten to discussing, like, a real-life horror
on Horror Catch-Up. Yeah, we do always joke about that. And this was a real-life thing that happened.
Yeah, a real-life act of
hundreds of
political
years ago.
Persecution of, I don't know, what, probably thousands of people.
Probably.
Yeah. Mm. Good times.
Yay!
Well, I think that's all the horror that we have to catch up on this week. So all we have left to do is find out what movie we are watching next episode. And normally it would be Allison with an I's turn to pick, but because she is off visiting a cat sanctuary inhabited by cat mummies. Right?
No.
No? No. Allison with a Y is going to pick in Allison with an I's stead. So what the hell are we watching?
So we're gonna watch the 2020 I think it's a Netflix original called The Old Ways.
That's an interesting title. Like, I feel like that's going to be one of these movies that, like, they crank out for boomers that's about, like, old action heroes, like, getting together for one last job.
No.
Yeah, okay.
No, sorry. It's not that kind of old ways.
Okay. But
the little Netflix description says, a reporter visits her birthplace in Veracruz for a story about tribal culture, only to be kidnapped by locals who believe she's demonically possessed.
Well, we will be watching The Old Ways next time. And until then, as always, visit the website, everyhorrormovieonnetflix.com. We've got every episode we've ever done out there, as well as a link to our merch store where you can find all kinds of goodies, t-shirts, coffee cups, stickers, whatever the hell you want. We probably can put Every Horror Movie on Netflix art on it for you. We'd also love for you to join us on social media.
You can find us on Facebook, Blue Sky, Instagram, YouTube at Amoncast, E-H-M-O-N cast. And you can find us on TikTok for now at Amon Podcast.
And also join our Discord server. We've got a lovely international community of folks out there who are discussing not just this podcast, but also all kinds of horror that they are watching outside of what we watch for the show. And lastly, please follow and leave us a review on your podcast provider of choice. We love to get that feedback, and it helps people find the show. Well, that closes out another round of Horror Catch-Up. We will see you next week for The Old Ways. For every horror movie on Netflix, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Allison with a Y.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.